Well, good morning, everybody. I do love this book of Nehemiah, it's true. And, you know, over the next 4 weeks, we're going to be looking at what this has to say to us in our time, really. That Nehemiah was instrumental in rebuilding and re-establishing Jerusalem itself in the 5th century BC, and it was following the Babylonian exile. It's a story about leadership, rebuilding, restoration, and revival of the whole people of God. And it's not without its problems either, and we'll be coming across that in the next 3 weeks. The theme this week is returning, rebuilding, and restoring. But a bit of background to this whole book might help us, just to start off with. And so in 586 BC, Jerusalem was destroyed by Nebuchadnezzar, and around 45,000 Jewish people were exiled to Babylon. They're not sure how many, because only men's names are ever recorded, and along with that comes whole families. So that's about the number that were moved. It was a pretty, pretty brutal time. After the fall of Babylon to the Persian king Cyrus the Great, that was about in 1939 BC. The exiles were then released to return to Jerusalem, and they came back in three phases. Massive numbers of people moved back to Jerusalem, and Nehemiah begins at about 455 BC. Whilst he was still exiled, he was still living in Persia, long way away from Jerusalem. So who was Nehemiah? When he was exiled, he had some authority in Judah, and he ended up in Susa, and he'd risen, whilst he was there, he'd risen to a top position in the Persian Empire. He was cupbearer to the king himself. Risky job at the best of times, but it came with the complete trust of the king. Even so, Nehemiah's heart was in Jerusalem, this small city, ruined and, you know, far from any centre of power that he was used to in his life in Persia. One day he heard, as you've heard in this story, from Hanani and others in Jerusalem about how the Jewish people were getting on, how they'd become dispersed to the outlying towns and villages, virtually abandoning the city, the temple, their worship, and by now they were in danger of losing their culture, their identity as God's people, and their faith too. And in those days, walls meant security, they meant safety, and they meant comfort and strength for the people who lived in them. There was protection there, and faced with over 2 miles of this broken wall that needed repairing, the Jewish people, for all sorts of reasons, had just given up. They'd lost sight of who God really is, and they were unaware of their own plight, because as they'd become separated in small groups and isolated, they'd lost the big picture, and they didn't see what had happened to them as a nation. I think it probably begs the question, how does that happen to a whole committed, faithful community of people? People who knew of all the miraculous ways in which God had dealt with his people, had brought them out of Egypt, and the rest of the stories that are in the Old Testament. And the other question is, could that happen to us? Some uncomfortable questions cropped up as I was preparing this, and I wasn't quite expecting the focus that some of, in the way some of this has gone. So as they were returning, Nehemiah had travelled all the way from Persia. As he listened to the people who Hanani and the people from Jerusalem, his response was that he wept. He was miles away from Jerusalem. He wasn't involved with that group of people, but yet his heart was broken. He wept over the broken walls of the city, but he also wept over the broken people of God. And his heart went out to them. Rebuilding the walls of Jerusalem then became Nehemiah's burden. And he carried that in his heart because he knew that God wanted him to act. I wonder if you've ever felt like that, where you felt God wanted you to do something. Maybe it's a small thing, not this is massive. But sometimes, God speaks to us and it might be to phone someone, it might be to visit someone, it might be to write a letter, it might be just to say something, some word of kindness. And we didn't, and it got lost like the morning dew. God is trying to speak to us all the time. And this morning, does this situation speak to us? Is there something that we need to think about here? Are we ambivalent? Are we careless about our worship? About gathering together? Does it matter to us some days? Praying. Has God become our spare wheel in the boot of the car that we get out in emergencies? And is our prayer life like a spiritual fire engine that we call on in the crisis, but otherwise we don't much bother? And another question that I was sort of faced with as I was preparing this, when did you or I last weep over the state of our nation? About the decline of faith in our country? Or when we hear about the decline of numbers in the Church of England? And that's very real. It's happening. And God's heart is breaking when we shut him out, when we carry on and miss what's actually happening in our own culture, our own nation, our own community, here and now. And also in our own lives, always looking to the future. And perhaps God's wanting to say something to you this morning about a particular thing in your own life, personally. Or are we like Nehemiah, so concerned about the health of our community and our town, our nation, our faith, that we too weep and cry out to God? And if so, like Nehemiah, are we prepared to do something about that? After weeping over the plight of the people, Nehemiah eventually stopped. And there is a time for lament. And we need to give space for that sometimes. But then there's time to move on. He fasted and he prayed. And he reminded God in his prayer about the promises God had made about his people. So he called on God. When we come back to you, remember, God, what you had promised, that you'd gather us from the north, from the south, from the east and the west. Nehemiah didn't complain and he didn't blame. He wasn't saying, I can't believe that the walls are still broken down. Somebody ought to do something about it. And it's so easy to be an armchair critic. And we've all done it. But God really needs people who not only talk about a situation, but will commit to do something about it. Nehemiah was just such a person. He got permission from the king of Persia. He got a lot of authority given to him. He sent him armed with letters that gave him safe passage until he got to Jerusalem. And he also took a load of building materials with him to get the job done. This alone was a confirmation for Nehemiah that he was about God's business. It was very rare that such a king would even speak to someone like Nehemiah about things that might be worrying him, let alone offer all the resources that were given to him. So then Nehemiah turned to rebuilding those walls. And when he arrived in Jerusalem, it became very clear to everyone who was in charge. And it was only after careful planning that he'd be ready to go public with his mission from God. Speaking too soon could have caused rivalry amongst the Jews as to the best way they might start the job. They might do it this way, they might do it that way. And Nehemiah He travelled all the way from Persia, and he'd had lots of time to think about it and plan. And he didn't want lots of committees, endless planning sessions. He needed one plan that would bring quick action. So how did Nehemiah, coming to Jerusalem at that time, motivate a dispersed, despairing people into such an enthusiastic army of co-workers? He fasted, he prayed, he planned well, and then he acted decisively. And then Nehemiah gathered the leaders together to share his vision. And this is what he said, and I've taken this from the message. Then I gave them my report. Face it, we're in a bad way here. Jerusalem is a wreck, its gates are burned down. Come, let's build the wall of Jerusalem and not live with this disgrace any longer. And then he witnessed to them about the way God had been in the middle of everything he'd done. I told them how God was supporting me and how the king was backing me up. And they replied, we're with you. So let's get started. And they rolled up their sleeves, ready for the good work. And then something happened that maybe even Nehemiah wasn't expecting. The moment they started the work on the wall together, the people found that confidence began to rise. Heads were lifted, faith was growing, and as they started to work together in unity, they all experienced God's blessing. And unity amongst God's people is a powerful and it's a very precious thing. Nehemiah was more than an expert, gifted organizer and pragmatic leader. He was a man of God, and he knew and he understood the value of teams, of clear vision and perseverance, keeping the main thing the main thing. He didn't act without prayer, and he didn't pray without acting. It's not that every time we pray there's going to be something to do, but when we hear from God, sometimes we need to just get on with it rather than wait for more and more confirmation. Prayer punctuates the whole book of Nehemiah, and he's always giving God the glory. Even for arrow prayers, for the moment just before something happens, he's saying, oh Lord, I need your help now, like going into the king's presence. And it happened whilst he was working on the wall as well. Trusting God doesn't mean that we don't act. An action doesn't mean that we don't trust God. And sometimes we can feel drawn into thinking that it's not Christian to shake a tree or two to get things moving, because Christians don't do that sort of thing. If things end up in the long grass, well, you know, we'll just trust God to keep moving things on. But it's also true that the devil loves to embrace the wait and see policy. He loves us to do that because it will slow down the work of God. It'll lose momentum and stay off the radar, and sometimes for a very, very long time. And Nehemiah hadn't travelled all the way from Persia to sit with committees planning what he'd already done the work for. Then we come to chapter 3. You purposely can't read it, because if you look in Nehemiah, and I would urge you to read the whole book over this 4 weeks, there are 32 verses of names here. They're all men, because that's the only people they recorded at that time. But everyone was prepared to give up their day job and start this heavy manual work. None of them were trained in it, to get the wall rebuilt. But the list of names in the Bible is important, because what matters to God matters to us. Our ministries matter to God. Our lives matter to God. And our relationship with him matters above all things. The first to start the work was the high priest. As they stepped up, Their whole company stepped up. Then there were the goldsmiths, perfumers, rulers of districts, their daughters, families, they all joined in. And there was an urgency and a momentum to the work. Not all went smoothly, but we know that when God is work, that God is at work, there's always going to be opposition. So what does this have to say to us today? The churches today, you know, they have lots of nice buildings, but some things in the church are broken. But when God begins to revive his people, they begin to see the broken walls and they start to care again. They start to turn back to him, wanting to see change and to glorify him. Nehemiah brought a fresh look. He brought fresh eyes to the situation in Jerusalem with a revelation from God. So what about us? Let's take a fresh look at our situation, bearing in mind that part of our vision together for building onto the church. This is the piece of land adjacent to us. And this is the church hall. Two pieces of land that were given to us by God and have stories behind them, and are pretty derelict at the moment. So the question for me as I looked around in the week, purposely went to have a look, have we got so used to seeing them that we don't see them at all anymore? Like the people living alongside the broken walls of Jerusalem and unaware that there might be something God wants us to check out again. Is this a Nehemiah moment for us all? And do we as a church need a fresh look at what's happening in our backyard, in our community, in our nation? In Aldous Huxley's story, you know, it's a book called The Island, and there are some minor birds. And they've been trained to fly down on unsuspecting visitors, and they cry out, "Attention! Attention!" They probably don't do it just like that. "Here and now, boys! Here and now!" And there's in the book, there's a young islander called Mary, and she explains why the minor birds do this. And she said, "That's what you always forget, isn't it? I mean, you forget to pay attention to what's happening now." So when we were on holiday a week ago, I was walking around Buckfast Abbey. It's very different to what I've just been showing you. And as I wandered around the Abbey, I noticed a plaque and it had information about the building itself. And it said, in 1906, the work was begun with only £5 in the funds, a horse and cart lent by a kind neighbour and a load of stone. One monk was trained as a mason and five others formed a team with him. And 32 years later, the Abbey was completed. And if you visit Ripley Hospital, you need to go past where you give blood, if any of you know where that is, towards the wards, and you'll find a story. And it's how a miner died in Ripley, and he had to be taken to Derby by horse and cart. And by the time he'd had an accident in the pit, by the time he got there, he died. And then a group of miners organised themselves and they paid a penny a week over a period of time to get this hospital built in Ripley. A year later, the work began and it was completed in 9 months. They had a passion and a purpose for the work that produced an energy and a grit and all the stuff that's needed to get that sort of job done. Nehemiah was in the same place. He was passionate about what God had called him to do, and he was sure that this was the moment. He didn't have all the answers. He started the work, he improvised on the way, and he prayed through every problem, keeping his eyes fixed on God. And God blessed all of them. And like Nehemiah, you know, John can't do this on his own. It needs, like Nehemiah, the commitment and the prayers of every single one of us. And we need to trust God, seeking when that moment is for this building project to be done. There is a hold-up at the moment. There is just one person, one registrar in the whole of the diocese holding up any progress towards selling the church hall. All it needs is a bit of time and a signature, and then we can put the church hall on the market. So something to pray about. Nehemiah, like Paul in Philippians, focused on the goal. It was to build God's kingdom. That's what he was about, and it was to glorify God above all things. I'm going to read this from the Message because I just like the just slight difference in the translation. I'm not saying that I have this all together, that I've made it, but I'm well on my way, reaching out for Christ, who has so wondrously reached out for me. Friends, don't get me wrong. By no means do I count myself an expert in all of this, but I've got my eye on the goal, where God is beckoning us onwards to Jesus. I'm off and running, and I'm not turning back. Nehemiah was off and running the race that was set before him, and he didn't turn back. The question for us is, what's the race that's set before us, here and now, in Ripley? Amen.